Hey guys, this is Rich Froning, and you're listening to Barbell Shrugged. For the video version, go to fitter.tv.
That's when you say this stuff at the intro of the show, bro.
I forgot what I was supposed to say.
He said we need something inspiring.
Welcome to Chris. Welcome to...
All right, doing this for real. 3, 2, 1.
I thought we were doing it for real.
Oh, you're supposed to say 3, 2, 1.
3, 2, 1.
Go.
Welcome to Barbell Shrugged. I'm Mike Bledsoe here with Doug Larson and Chris Moore.
Hi.
If you saw the
we're
intro,
ready for the show.
If you saw the intro, you know that we're going to be talking about recovery today.
God, we're so rested and ready and recovered. I got ninja hands. We're gonna chop the subject up.
But first, I want to mention that you should check out fitter.tv and sign up for the newsletter. And also, you should check out Faction Foods Nutrition Course. Doug goes into a lot of detail about how to recover via nutrition on the nutrition side of things. During that seminar that he does,
you'll get lost in detail. It'll change everything about your life. You'll never see
it'll change your
food
life.
The same way again.
It will change your life. That's what you told that girl today at the gym. She said, "Should I sign up?" And Mike was like, "Only if you want to change your life."
Whatever.
She's like, "I'll do it."
She totally bought it. What?
Man. Oh, thanks, Mark.
In that case, it sounds like a good idea.
I don't know. I mean, like, I've gotten much more bold when I talk to people now. Like, before, I was like, yeah, if you want, you know, a long time ago, you know, if you want to, you know, get in shape or lose some weight, or if you want to, like, do CrossFit, yeah. But, like, you know, after running a facility for so long, and then you get a lot of people coming in, and they're like, you know, you change their lives. They get off medication. Like, they're definitely on the road to being dead in the next 5 years. You know, they're taking these medications, and their blood glucose levels are like skyrocketing and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, you get them training and eating paleo, and a year later, like, and they're not taking any of that stuff, and they're way thinner, and they're,
do we have
they
any
have
clients
energy.
That were close to death?
Oh, I have some clients that they have come to us, and they go,
oh,
thank you. You've saved my life, or you saved, you know, mm-hmm. my friend's life, or my
Michael
wife.
Michael Bledsoe,
I very specifically
hero.
Yeah, I very specifically remember one time.
Basically, that's what I was getting at.
NSCA, CPT, CrossFit certification, comma, hero. Level 2 hero.
I'm gonna start signing signing off on my emails that way.
We could probably corner the market on hero certifications.
Hero certification.
Yeah.
Man.
Sounds as good as anything I've heard.
I have yet to see a hero certification. I think that might be the way to go.
All right, we're effectively off topic. Recovery.
No, no, we're not. All right, we're going to talk about... why are we even talking about recovery? And we feel that it is a highly overlooked topic. Doug, what do you think? Why do you think people overlook this topic?
It's certainly not the first thing people think when they think about joining a gym. They think about coming in.
All the work.
Yeah, they think about doing all the work. You know, they think about lifting the weights and running the miles, or, you know, doing the push-ups or what have
Rocky
you.
Rocky montage.
That's right. And they don't think about, like, the fact that during the actual training, they're not getting better necessarily. They're breaking themselves down only to build themselves back up when they go and recover outside of the gym. Then they come back bigger and better than they were.
That's it, Doug. The building back up part.
That's right.
Yeah. So
dose response, as you always say.
Yeah. The greatest story ever heard, or the greatest little quip, Dr. Mike Stone, he talked about a bunch of the show. He's a mentor to us all, was a mentor to me when I was back in research. The coolest thing he said was, yeah, I mean, there's no difference. It's kind of describing what a strength coach, what a fitness professional was. He kind of equated it more to being like a pharmacist, in that you are prescribing something to a client to get a response. So there's all kinds of things that you think about when you think with that kind of perspective. One being, you got to give the right dose to get the response you want, and you got to get that response. That covers things like not giving too much exercise at the beginning, because just like taking a pill, if you start off with 1,000 milligrams dose when 100 would do the job, you would quickly be in trouble. So it's a good way to think about it. But yeah, I mean, it's not the work that gets you the results you want. It's how well you recover from the work. And if you can't recover from the work, you're not putting at least as much attention on recovery as you are the work part, you're not going to get all the results you could have.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, they think, oh, I've got recovery down. No. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I
rest all the time.
I've got no problem sleeping
well,
in.
It's like the people who say, oh, you know, I've tried to eat a bunch and I just can't gain the weight. You're not eating as much as you think you are. So I guess rest is probably the same. It's like, dude, I'm not getting the gains I want. I'm resting all the time. Like, I'm getting like 5 hours of sleep a night, or I'm eating like 3 times a day, or I'm taking all this. Well, to you, it seems like a lot. To everybody looking at that, they wouldn't think it's very much. So change your perspective.
Yeah, and I think people just, when they first like start training, if they're a beginner, all they're worried about is training, and they don't worry about, I mean, I don't even think the thought of recovery pops in people's heads. Like, I don't think it's even a concern. Like,
well, the thing you struggle with all the time is that if you're not working, when you just set all these new goals, it's the first of the year, you've got all these resolutions, lose X of weight, gain X amounts of strength, get all these skills learned. How are you going to do it if you're resting? So you think more is better, and the more part you're thinking about is the work part. Mm-hmm. Every time you find yourself resting and recovering, you think, well, I'm being lazy. I should be working or doing something.
Yeah, people come to us all the time. They say, oh, I'm so tired. I think I'm overtraining. It's like, how often are you training? They're like, I don't know, 3 or 4 days a week. And we're like, you are not overtraining. You are, as you always say, you're not overtraining. You're under recovering.
Yeah.
You know, if McGolder can come in and train 13 sessions a week or 15 sessions a week, you know, 2 days most days, and then a triple on Saturdays, and get through it and get stronger and better
then
every week.
You, my friend, are not overtrained.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he gets better every week, and his training volume is super high.
I remember when I was in school, and
You remember something.
I do remember something from school. This girl, like, so we're supposed
to... Something about a girl.
Yeah.
Okay. I like this story so far.
She was pretty hot, and that's probably why I was listening in the first place. But
it was a hot professor?
Lady,
no. No, student. So
lady, you had my curiosity. Now you have my attention.
So we're all supposed to present something that we would want to present to, like, if you were being interviewed by the news or something like that. Like, what would you want to tell the average person? And so I want to tell people about squatting or something, right? Which makes sense. And
the most boring newscast ever.
This girl wants to talk about, or maybe the importance of the squat or something like that. Yeah. You know, something that's novel to most people, but, you know, is going to be helpful. She comes up with overtraining. And I was just, I wanted to like throw stuff at her from the back of the classroom.
America is so overtrained.
I'm like, yeah, that's our problem in the United States right now, is that people are working out way too much. I was back there going, you are an idiot. Like, there's nobody at French Riviera Spa overtraining. That's the Globo Gym in Memphis.
Yeah, I definitely got sort of, people got sensitized to the idea and sort of like, well, maybe I'm overtrained. Well, yeah, I mean, obvious points is no. And then there's a lot of people who just refuse to even believe in a concept, who, you know, guys like our buddy John North, who's like, proudly displays the awesome t-shirts and bumper stickers, you know, overtraining is a myth.
You know? Right.
I think he actually says a lot, you know, you're not overtrained, you're under recovered.
Well, I think he's on the same focus, and he has some strange things going on.
We love John.
Yeah. But like, he takes a morning swim, like, even if they're like, he has to like break the ice in a pool. I don't know where he's doing this, but I saw him saying he's taking a morning swim outside and it was cold. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, I tweeted at him. He's like, so, like, oh yeah, it's a daily ritual. I'm like, it's something I do every day. I thought it was in like preparation for the American Open or something.
And
like
that's a kind of recovery, is making, carving out time for something that means a lot to you, that makes you feel rejuvenated. Cause I think anything that sort of subjectively reduces your distress is probably a very good thing. Like, if it's sitting in the morning and having a cup of coffee, having 30 minutes to read a book and forget about all the concerns, it's going to settle the mind and help you concentrate on the other things you need to do during the day.
Yeah, one thing you were saying earlier, right before we got started, was that you view stress as a cumulative thing. No matter where the stress is coming from, whether you're just stressed out from being at work or whether you're actually taking on physical stress from training, it all piles on top of each other. Yeah. So, you know, you could have a low training volume week, but just a stressful, you know, rest of your life, and it could affect your training negatively.
Yeah, you got to keep everything checked and balanced in your life. So if you have a goal to compete for competition or train for competition, and yet you're planning to do so at the end of the year, and work's getting really busy, boss is asking you to stay a few hours past 5, that spills over into your training. You get all, you know, tense about that. You rush to the gym, everybody's already started, you get stressed, you try to catch up, you leave, you don't feel like you had a good training session because you probably didn't. You don't sleep well that night because you're kind of stressed about it and bummed about it because it's important to you. You get up the next day, you go to work, all that pressing project deadlines and stuff reappear. You get stressed about it, the next training session, boss asks you again to do some work, you go home late, you get backed up on your training. That kind of cycle is really easy and to get caught up in, and it's inevitable. It's going to happen. And those times you have to back off the training demand and try to be more efficient in the gym, or else you just won't be able to fit all that in. It's just the reality of it.
And you're talking about stress and cumulative stress. Like, what exactly is going on in the body? I mean, Chris, like, what do you think is happening? Like, is the stress that we're experiencing at work the same stress that we're experiencing in the gym? Like, you're putting your body under stress when you, train.
You know, all these,
but like, what's the difference there?
Yeah, I mean, as far as in the gym, these physical stresses are kind of, we're more familiar with, you know, you're getting amped up for a set, but really you're so used to that and you find it so pleasurable. It's not really distressful, I think, from a nervous system perspective. You're not really getting a big wear and tear there. You get a little bit of a ding there when you do for a big, heavy, like deadlift attempt. That's why you can't deadlift so often, so heavy. It wears down the ability of your nervous system to come up with the effort for that. But yeah, there's all the routine stress of the stress in the muscle tissues, hormonal responses to deal with that. But I think people really discount the distress that comes from busy work days that make you distracted and unfocused in the gym, but loom over you as you train. You know, I guess that raises all your physiological variables, your heart rate, your blood pressure, everything. It has a physical effect on you just the same, but it's detracting from your ability to focus on the workout. You go home, that stress is still there. If you don't do a really diligent job of trying to recover from it, it will not go away. It'll mount like credit on your credit card or you know, charges on your credit card. Each little thing you do that you don't pay off as quickly as possible starts mounting. Pretty soon it gets harder and harder to recover from.
And one thing I find with a lot of athletes is they compartmentalize what they think about stress. So
yeah,
they don't associate physical stress with emotional stress, spiritual stress, mental stress. Like, they see that I can be mentally, a lot of athletes think they can be very emotionally stressed and mentally stressed and stressed at home. And then the physical stress they experience in the gym is a completely different thing. And that's really not the case. You can't compartmentalize them. And so when we get an athlete who, you know, what is that
what
sound?
Is that?
The helicopter.
God. There's a helo outside.
This week on Barbell Shrugged, we're sponsored by
Black
the local news station.
Black helicopters. Who does that?
It's
Alex Jones.
This is now the Alex Jones show. We have black helicopters outside.
You're being monitored by government
black
drones.
Black helicopters are outside.
Drones, dude.
The drones are quiet.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
They're sneaky.
We'd already be dead by now.
We would be dead.
but I just thought on the topic, a great little book, educational value I'm adding to the audience. Get yourself like a $2 used copy of Hans Selye's Stress of Life book. One of the first books I read. Wow. I think I read it on my own, actually, in grad school, because, you know, every strength and conditioning course you'll ever take in school, they always reference his curve, his stress response. Like, too much stress. Oh, it's getting a lot of stress. Oh, I'm very alarmed. Oh, I'm going over the edge. Oh, I'm going to die. Like, kind of, let's base everything we do off this curve. But they never really go into all the great research he did on that. They just say, well, you have too much, and pretty soon it gets to be way too much to recover from, and you're dead.
Yeah, I've never read that.
But that book is really cool.
It's funny because I reference that myself because it's in every textbook on training and periodization and all
that
kind of stuff.
Don't be the guy who references something to sound smart and doesn't read the book.
Well,
because I do that too. You're not as skillful as I am. You can't do it and still sound really smart.
I will reference the principle, but I'm not going
to. Yeah, you don't need to read the whole thing because it's a bunch of like electrocuting the shit out of like rat gonads and seeing what happens. But it's really fascinating stuff. The guy
he's just
was
a masochist.
Genius. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Science. All things in the name of science.
Yeah. But going back to what I was kind of talking about is like athletes tend to want to compartmentalize and they think it's not going to affect them and they've got to recognize it is cumulative.
Yeah. If you have a bad day at work,
yeah,
you just had a kid and you're not sleeping that great, you just had a fight with your girlfriend, you're going to the gym, and you know, any one of these things you have to be very diligent in accounting for. These have a real measurable repeating effect on how you perform in a gym. So we talk about counting for stress. That's one. Check that off the list.
Well,
pay attention.
Well, I want to talk about cortisol a little bit. And people talk. That's been in infomercials, like cortisol, the stress hormone, and
belly fat.
I think, yeah,
that's right.
People do. You know, it is attributed to belly fat, and but it's also a very necessary hormone. And Doug, I know you were talking about wanting to talk about sleep cycles a little bit in regard to hormones and. Can you tell us exactly how cortisol plays a role in our recovery?
Yeah. So when you wake up in the morning, you're going to have very high cortisol levels, and then it's going to kind of taper off throughout the day. And then throughout the night, it's going to raise back up, and then it's going to taper off throughout the day. And that's kind of the cycle that you generally get for cortisol. So for the stress all being the same and being cumulative, I think definitely hormonally, it's super cumulative. Like if you're at work and you're stressed out, you're going to have higher adrenaline, higher cortisol levels as a result of being stressed out. The physical stressors definitely aren't the same. Obviously, you're not going to get a lot of like muscle tissue breakdown. You're not going to be sore from being stressed out at work. So maybe you could say that that's slightly different. But hormonally, I think stressors kind of build up on top of each other. As far as the sleep cycles go, I was looking at sleep cycles earlier today. Everyone knows about like REM sleep. They tend to think like, you know, if I was in a deep sleep, I was in REM sleep, which is probably isn't 100% correct. Generally, you go through a couple different cycles when you sleep. You have four non-REM, rapid eye movement type sleeps, sleep stages, excuse me. The first two, you're kind of just starting to calm down. Like if someone bumped you, you'd wake up. You're not really asleep yet. You're not really getting any recovery benefit from that. That's why if you take a power nap, it can kind of rejuvenate you, but you're not really going to get recovered from any type of like muscular damage.
Right. From what I understand, the first two cycles, that power nap is good for the mind. It's like a defrag for the brain, but yeah, you're not going to get in the hormonal response that you're wanting.
Yeah, that's right. You're not going to get the hormonal response. You're not going to get any protein synthesis response. You're not going to gain muscle mass, for example, or recover from muscle tissue that's been broken down. It's not until you get into kind of the stage three, stage four deep sleep that you start to get those benefits. And then you kind of, when you're in stage one and stage two, you're sleeping very light. And then the deep sleep is stage three and stage four. And then actually kind of counter to what most people think, REM sleep, you're actually not in a deep sleep anymore necessarily. Right. You're coming back out of it. And then throughout the night, you go through those five stages on kind of like a 90, maybe 110 minute cycle. And then slowly throughout the night, those stage three and stage four deeper sleep stages shorten, and you stay mostly in the stage one, stage two kind of, stage one, stage two and REM sleep, which is the lighter sleep towards the morning. And then hopefully if you've slept enough and you've recovered enough, then you should be in those lighter stages of sleep right before you wake up. You should wake up feeling refreshed and recovered.
And then you've got your $500 escalating light, natural ambient alarm clock that gently eases you out of sleep and gets you on your day.
I still want to buy one of those.
Like the voice of gentle muses in your ear. Awaken, Mr. Bledsoe. It's time to get your day going.
Actually, I think I'm going to purchase that this month. I'm gonna invest in the Hue Light. It works off the iPhone.
I thought it was gonna be the cool one that had it.
I'm gonna get it before you. Sorry, dude.
When are you getting them?
I'm probably next couple weeks.
You're not gonna have it before me, asshole, because I'm buying it next weekend.
Well, I'm buying them tomorrow.
Well, I'm gonna buy them right now. I'm buying them.
Where's my iPhone? I'm gonna make the order right now. So, anyways, yeah, that's something I've been meaning to do. Is like the whole idea of an alarm clock, kind of waking up in the middle of whatever sleep cycle, or if you got enough sleep or not, then you're just going to wake up wherever you're at. And the idea is that, you know, you're going to wake up stressed out, as opposed to if you wake up on your own due to getting enough sleep, being spending more time, that graduation you're talking about. Mm-hmm. The idea is if you wake up via light, then you'll wake up in the most ideal time.
And I will point out, let me point out.
Go ahead.
He's like, I was pointing out something.
I'm going to point at you now. It's great if you can do it. But for all the parents in the audience, this shit is a pipe dream. Because every morning at a certain time, your kids are going to yell and scream. And
oh, yeah.
Sorry for you. Whatever shit cycle you're in the middle of, you're getting out of it.
That's why I'm not going to have kids yet. So I can still take advantage of my sleep.
Bro, I'm thinking about my recovery. I can't have kids. Wife, please. Think about our needs. We have to sleep.
People who are competitive athletes and have kids, I don't know how they do it. Because I need as much sleep as I can get. The idea is that you turn, say you want to pick like a 30-minute period you want to wake up between 6 and 6:30 and set the lights to like gradually come on as if it were to mimic the sunrise. And hopefully you would wake up at the right point in your sleep cycle instead of depending on that.
If you're in the middle of the sleep, I guess you wouldn't notice.
Yeah, I mean, the light will wake you up, but when it's good for you, probably.
It's sort of the opposite of having right next to you your iPhone with the alarm, the most annoying setting that every morning at 6:45 is going to rip you out of your dreams and immerse you into a cold reality.
I try to play like music I like. Like, I'm going to wake up to something I enjoy. But I'm still like snooze.
I like the alarm clock that you were talking about the other day with somebody where like it, you put it on your counter and then when it goes off, it rolls off your counter. It like enrolls in all different directions. It'll roll into your bed and you got to chase it down.
You have to chase it down. Yeah.
As it's screaming at you.
It's like one of those balls you used to play with that spins around.
That would be
it's unweighted
the,
and
that would be the opposite of what I'm advocating.
Yeah. That, if it'll that, wake you up.
If that doesn't stress you out, I don't know what will. Or what else do we want to talk about with the recovery? So recovery, it involves hormone production, you know, having healthy cortisol cycles going on, growth hormone, testosterone production. Mm-hmm. Those are some hormones that are being produced when you're asleep. That's what happens in those deeper sleeps.
Brain freeze.
Jeez.
I had like a good coaching tip and like, man.
I was letting myself being confined by the template of the board telling me what to talk about.
So I can recap. So I have some questions. Yeah. So we're thinking about hormones. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Yeah.
Stress.
Yeah.
And getting everything back in a good ratio, bro. So we can grow muscles and get everything balanced. And we're going to think of so far of two key things. Do everything and all things possible to get all the sleep you need, which I guess how much sleep is right for you is a whole bag of worms, isn't it, Doug? 8 hours does not apply to everybody, does it?
Not necessarily. It really depends on your training volume and how stressed you are at work. We talked about stress being cumulative, so yeah. 8 hours is a good place to start, but that's easier said than done in a lot of cases and might not be enough in a lot of people's cases.
So fight for it. Get to bed early, turn the lights off, turn the stimulation down. Don't try to work and be super creative, maybe necessarily all the way up until bedtime. Give yourself some downtime. Mm-hmm. Negotiate with your wife. Say, hey, look, listen, tonight I'll do
like you're in battle.
I'll do two loads of laundry. I'll cook dinner and make lunch for tomorrow. And then you let me sleep and you take care of the kid. Strategic negotiations.
That's like a nice way to say it. Just leave
I guess the other
just
big,
leave
the other alone. Big tip is that when these things are happening, if you're going through a bad stretch with the kids not sleeping, work is busy, there's some sort of stress in your life, make sure you think, okay, normally I would do this. Considering all this shitstorm going on in my life, I better knock things down 10%. I bet you, even though it seems like I'm not getting my work in, you know, this workout's too easy, I think you're doing yourself a favor. Then when the inevitable passage of that storm happens in a week or two and everything settles back down, then you can resume. So, I mean, you know, cut the cycle short, build another week on the next one, and be smarter because of it. Don't stick to some programs because it was set in stone. Now you think, no matter what happens in my life, no matter what happens, I'm doing this workout. Great. You get points for being a super tough guy, but your training is going to suck still. If you had a bad day at work and you didn't sleep and your dog got hit by a car and today calls for a max effort deadlift, don't do the max effort deadlift. Just bump that back a week. Be smart. Don't be dumb is what we're saying.
That is really good advice.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That'd be a bad day, though. My girlfriend broke up with me, my kid didn't sleep last night, and my dog got ran over by a snowmobile.
Holy shit, bro. We spent a lot of time talking about hormones and sleep and rest, but let's talk about like what exactly is recovery nutrition. So there's two sides of the coin when it comes to recovery, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. The first is like sleep and rest, and then the other is nutrition. Mm-hmm. So exactly. So we got a couple things to worry about when we talk about nutrition, and one might be glycogen replenishment, and the other would be building the muscle tissue that you've damaged. And then also, I think we were talking about this a little bit earlier too, is nervous system recovery as well. Mm-hmm. So the nervous system tends to take a big beating, and
that's the one I think people probably forget about. They think muscles, sure, and joints.
Yeah, I tend to not think about that a whole lot either, and I've experienced it myself where you almost, if you experience...
You guys hit me in the head with the camera twice. Does anybody pay attention?
Your head's too big.
Production is... That's right. Man, that's mean, man. That's mean.
If your head took up less room...
It happens to be true, though. I got a big head.
I lost my train of
thought. Derailed again. The
nervous system.
Nervous system recovery is something that's it's easy to forget about.
Yeah.
Because you don't really feel it quite as much. Like if you have super sore muscles, like muscular tissue breakdowns, easy to remember because you're sore as shit.
Well, it takes me weeks to notice that my nervous system is getting dull. I feel like dull to everything. Like
I notice
getting slow.
Yeah, getting slow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that ties into getting slow. Yeah,
my coordination goes down a little bit. Like I'll bump into the wall like on accident. You know what I mean? Like, wow, maybe I'm fatigued. That's when you know you need to go take a nap.
Yeah, or you miss 10 snatches in a row at 80% of your one rep max.
Yeah,
you should probably take a break.
Or if every third word is followed with I think you should do is eat food.
That's what I sound like when I present anything.
Well, let's talk about the nutrition side of things a little bit. So, glycogen.
What is that? Doug, is that sugar?
That was a hell of an explanation.
Glycogen. All right, let's talk about glycogen. And then,
okay.
So we'll talk about glycogen and we'll talk about rebuilding muscle as well. So you want to explain, I think Doug does an excellent job of explaining glycogen and glycogen replenishment.
Sure. Pretty much all glycogen is just all the carbohydrates that you store. For now, we'll say just in your muscles. You also store it in your liver, but we're going to focus on muscles today. So anytime you do any type of heavy or fast or high intensity type movement, you're going to be burning primarily, we'll say, carbohydrates. So anytime you get that burn in your muscles and you produce lactic acid, all that lactic acid was produced from burning carbohydrates. And so you burned all those carbohydrates. You got to replenish those carbohydrates. And what those carbohydrates are called when they're stored in your muscles is muscle glycogen. So post-workout or during your workout, it's okay to have some sugar in a workout drink because you're burning all that sugar off. And so you can just build it back. The rest of your day, if you're just sitting in your office, you're not really burning a whole lot of muscle glycogen. So, you know, crushing Coke or Gatorade all day long is a bad thing because those stores are already full. You know, and if they're already full, then those calories have to go somewhere. And the assumption is that they're going to body fat because they're not going
they go to your ass.
What types of sugars are best
lower
for
back fat?
What are the best sugars for replacing glycogen?
For muscle glycogen, we're talking mostly about pure glucose. So Gatorade and like table sugar are going to have a little bit of fructose in them. It's not 100% ideal. If you bought pure glucose or waxy maize or maltodextrin, those basically break down into pure glucose. Or if you just ate some type of very starchy vegetable, if you ate potatoes or rice or any of those, anything that's starchy, for the most part, starches break down into pure glucose and there's no fructose in starches. So if you're going to try to stay 100% paleo and you're going to eat potatoes and rice and things like that, then for the most part, those carbohydrates are going to break down into pure glucose. So post-workout, those really aren't that bad of an option, especially for someone who's trying to replenish glycogen as fast as possible, like if you're doing two workouts a day, or if you're trying to gain muscle mass.
Is there a reason to do Gatorade over waxy maize or glucose specifically?
It tastes really good, and it's got electrolytes in it.
It's got electrolytes.
You've bought into the
stuff
lies.
That plants crave.
Brondo is what plants crave.
I can't say electrolytes without thinking about that movie. Ever.
You got to watch Idiocracy, people. Watch Idiocracy and then look up Brondo commercials on YouTube.
The Brondo commercials are just great.
It's good for 20 minutes of entertainment for sure.
Yeah.
I was going to say another thing. I just got reminded. I did that post last week, and part of the research I read was in rats. So yeah, it's curious how none of these mechanisms we're talking about are independent. Like you getting tired, your diet, the needs for replenishing your glycogen reserves, your needs for sleep. The interesting thing is these things are linked. Like I read this research where you can take rats and inject some little compound that blocks adenosine receptors, for instance. Adenosine being something that piles up, I guess, when you cleave off a bunch of
And you're the guy
ATP.
That was wanting us to avoid complex terminology at the beginning of the show.
Bear with me. So you have this little magical energy molecule in your body that you cut the end off, you get a little energy released, right? So I guess one of the things that happens when you do that is one component piles up as a byproduct. I guess maybe it does it throughout the day. Like in rats, if you inject something in their brains, that sounds cruel. I'm sure it's just like that. Oh, look at this little rat. Boink. Inject a syringe full of some shit into its cerebral cortex. But if you do that, again, I'm paraphrasing the research. The scientists did not write this up in a methodology. First, we take the fucking rat and jam its head with a syringe full of this shit. Sounds fancier than that, but bear with us. But if you do that, if you block the reception of those compounds that pile up, these rats don't get sleepy. But if you let this happen naturally, the more metabolic byproducts that produce as they go about their daily lives, the more the need for sleep accumulates because that's that built-in mechanism that the brain is monitoring and putting a checks and balances in. So it's like we talk about sleep, we talk about nutrition. Like these things aren't independent silos of things. These are complicated things that are happening in your body sort of naturally. And your brain is really, really good at monitoring what's going on in your muscle fiber as you're contracting. Like it's not just a separate thing that's happening. It's all fancy. It's pretty cool. Hey, science is cool. Science built that chair.
I don't even know how to respond to that.
It's all tied together.
Yeah. My brain just exploded.
Right. You just explained the Matrix for your muscles.
You want to give a quick teaser and then we'll take a break?
Quick teaser. Yeah. Next, we're going to talk about the top three recovery methods that we recommend.
Well, I feel teased.
Yeah.
I wonder what those are.
I do want to talk about, and we're also going to talk about what protein does. So having protein drinks for training.
Perfect.
I guess. That sounds titillating.
Ooh.
Behave like you're not an animal.
I can't not behave like I'm not an animal. Hey guys, welcome back. If you didn't notice.
Did you hear that?
That's Grace.
That's a separate coaching tip we were just
the
talking
barbell
about.
Shrug dog.
Aw.
Hashtag Grace.
Grace the dog.
Grace the dog.
Wait. Like the wad.
Yep. I named my
not
dog.
Not Grace the Wad, Grace the dog.
I named my dog after 30 cleaning jerks.
Yes, you did. And your other dog is named?
Izzy, short for Isabel, the wad for 30 snatches.
For dirty snatches?
30 snatches.
Oh, 30 snatches.
Whoa. Let's get back on track with this podcast.
All right, we're going to deliver on what we promised we'd talk about. We're going to talk about the top three recovery methods. So, Doug, what is your favorite recovery method?
What do we do? Like, what do we do if we want to recover? What do we do? What are the top three things?
Let's list these by priority. Like if you can only do one, or maybe you should put a lot of emphasis on this. So, what do you think is like the top three most important things you should be doing for recovery?
What would you do?
What do you do?
Let him talk.
Let's go next 25 minutes.
you've angered the cameraman.
Let's figure out how many ways we can ask the same question. So, Doug, if there were only three things, hypothetically.
he wants to go home. So, obviously, we've been talking about sleep the whole time. So, sleep's tip top number one. After that, I'd say I'm going to break nutrition into two categories for this one.
How much sleep would be ideal?
Well, we kind of touched on that earlier. We were saying 8 hours, which most people have that in their head as like how much sleep you're supposed to get. But give or take, depending on how much recovery you really need, how tired you are, how much you're working at your job, how many training sessions you have per week. So I will start off with, right around 8 hours of sleep, give or take an hour. And then making sure you're getting enough food and enough quality food. So if you're not getting, a solid 3, 4, maybe 5 meals a day of, a quality paleo meal, then that's a good place to start. And then, like I said, I was going to break nutrition up into two different categories. So the third category for me is specifically workout nutrition. Are you getting enough calories either during or post-workout? And if you're getting all paleo meals, then your workout nutrition is probably going to be higher in carbohydrate, like we said right before the break, compared to the rest of your meals, to replenish that glycogen and also to give you a good insulin kick to promote all the protein that you're getting in that meal. Since insulin stores things in cells, it's going to store protein in your muscle cells and it's going to help you recover.
So you would say that the glucose plus the protein would have a synergistic effect?
Synergy. One of my favorite words.
Synergy is my favorite word, and I try to sneak it in everywhere.
Zoom in on this. This is the synergy, universal sign of synergy. Glycogen supplementation, glucose powder, shit that Butzo takes, protein powder, boom.
Oh, God.
All right, so do you agree with that, those three?
What are your top three recovery methods? And if it's the same as Doug's, that's okay.
Well, for every workout, I sacrifice a chicken. I say, dear God of recovery, let this poor soul represent my desire to appease you. Please bestow upon me plenty of workout recovery. So it usually works pretty good. Psychosomatic, largely. No, I agree with that. I mean, the thing I struggle with is not only focusing on the amount of time you're sleeping, but probably going into it to get the most out of that time. It's like, if you have fluorescent lights on in your living room and you're watching reruns of
Seinfeld
or something, you're all laughing and stimulated, and then you go try to jump into bed at 10 p.m. because you got to get up at 6. Man, even if you did fall asleep, you're going to take you a while to get into a deep sleep. So make sure you have this built-in relaxation or recovery phase kind of before. Chill out a little bit. That way you're ready to sleep when it's time to sleep. That might be a good little bonus tip for the audience.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to take Doug's advice and pay a little more attention to post-workout recovery, because I usually don't do that. I'm like, I'm just going home and I'll eat within the next 2 hours. I'm usually pretty bad about that kind of thing.
Hmm.
So I'm going to take Doug's advice. He's my friend. He's smart. But awesome. The sleep one. I was going to say, you know, to sleep, something that's really fascinating for me, because I was thinking of this thing today when I was driving about learning. I'm going to make an actual point. Bear with me. Sometimes it takes a while.
I hope you do.
No, but I mean, think of it this way as well, the importance of sleep. Like, you go to your gym and you put a lot of importance on focusing on the technique and trying to learn. You know, I'm paying really close attention to Mr. Bledsoe as he's showing me these tips to improve my clean and jerk, for instance. There's also other stuff you did in your day. You worked, you took on challenges, you read a book. But the curious thing about learning is none of that really helped you learn until you have processed. You mentioned really quickly about defragging your brain. Well, what happens when you learn is that you sort of build associations between what you've done in the past to what you've experienced. You strengthen certain positive memories, certain synapses in the brain that make strong associations that are weak are no longer relevant. You break down. It's all this complicated stuff that goes on when you truly learn. And a lot of that is going to happen while you sleep. Old memories are going to fire. You're going to replay through the day's events with the new memories. You're going to build associations. All it's going to happen randomly. You're going to get vivid representations of your past, which is another word for dreaming.
Whoa. And potential futures.
Yeah. So you tie together those relationships, and it's only when you awake.
I want to watch a documentary on dreams.
Yeah. It's only when you wake up from that good, well-planned.
I know everything there's no about dreaming.
When you wake up from that good, well-planned, high-quality sleep. You do it when it's appropriate time for you to get up. When you resume the next day, then you have to be more specific. Then you've actually done your learning. But it's right. Not until your brain makes sense of everything you've experienced till you've got that. So it's really, you maybe even put more focus on that night's sleep than you do on your actual training.
I think it's a really good point. Last week, I think it was Friday, I got really angry with myself the next day because I had an amazing training session. I mean, it went really well. Mm-hmm. I felt like I was moving really well. I was moving fast. I got done with the training session. I was like, man, I was on point the whole time. And then I went out and I had a few beers. I stayed up too late. I woke up too early the next day. I definitely didn't recover physically. Mm-hmm. I probably didn't recover mentally, like you're talking about right now. And I feel like I probably got 50% effectiveness out of that workout simply because I didn't go and recover optimally. And, you know, talking about nervous system a bit too, and that goes into the motor learning and all that kind of stuff. You know, even if I can cause my muscles to recover quicker, you know, I may not get learning, improving my snatch speed and those movement patterns as well as I could have. So, and that's just as important as anything else.
Yeah, you can't treat these things like they're independent and not connected. They all go with one package deal. You are not just a pile of muscle with a brain sitting on top of it. These things are finely tuned to work together.
Yeah.
But doing one without taking care of the other is not going to give you the comprehensive benefit.
Right.
And if you think that's true, man, you're just wrong. Good luck not making PRs, sucker. Sorry.
On the workout shake front, a lot of people talk about having a post-workout shake. For me personally, I drink most of my shakes during my training, especially if I'm just doing strength work and I'm not metconning. You know, some people don't like to have stuff in their stomach when they metcon. They get all pukey feeling.
Pansies.
Which kind of goes away after you're kind of accustomed to metconning frequently.
Why don't you get in shape?
So people talk about having a post-workout shake as opposed to like a peri-workout or like a during-workout shake. Really, I view drinking your shake during your training as almost like a post-workout shake. Because if you train for an hour, it's really if you start drinking your shake at the beginning of your training session, like those nutrients aren't going to peak in your bloodstream until after about an hour. So right about the time you're finishing up your workouts, right when those nutrients are going to be peaking, which is right when you want them to be peaking for max recovery. Right. So
I do that just because it seems physically, it just seems more appropriate. Like if I'm all tired, I got to drink this fucking glass of stuff. It's kind of gross. And it's like, okay, I got to chug this down. That don't feel so good.
Yeah.
If I drink it before, I don't feel so good. So I'm like, oh, it makes sense. I feel really great if I just sip on it the whole time. Plus, mm-hmm. I'm like not really getting that thirsty. And I kind of sort of settles the stomach. Mm-hmm. Nice little routine between heavy sets. It just makes more sense on all levels.
Yeah, and then right towards the end of your workout, when you're supposed to be getting the most fatigued, you actually have some nutrients flowing around your bloodstream, and you still feel okay because you got a little bit of, you still have a little bit of energy, and you're not totally depleted. That's how I feel about it.
That's also how I feel. How do you feel about it?
Somewhat similar.
Yes, I like yes. That, like,
every time I do a heavy wad. I do 3 wads, the hardest ones I can think of, and then I drink 2 pints of raw goat milk immediately after my last rep, and then I hurl.
Yeah,
different strokes.
While I train, I get through about 2/3 of my shake during my training, and then I chug the last third afterwards, and. Depending if I had a really high volume session, so say I'm doing a lot of CrossFit style training, then I will, after I drink, you know, I'll finish off the last bit. I'll probably consume more while I'm training if the volume's really high. Maybe I'll finish the entire shake while I'm training, and then afterwards I make a whole new one and I put that on top of it. So I'm like drinking 2 workout shakes really. And then, you know, the way I know if I'm getting too much of that is if I start getting fat. If I start accumulating some fat mass, I'm like, okay, I'm probably overdoing the post-workout shake a little bit too much on the carb side of things, especially.
Yeah. I'll make one more point. The coolest things I've been fascinated with lately is the different strokes comment Doug touched on, because really, there's this thing that's a good idea. Getting nutrients when your body needs it. We all agree. Some research is going to point at certain times being better than others. Sure, fine. But the real thing to focus on is doing it better than not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Just doing it gives you a lot of the benefits, and some of these little ancillary benefits, these small things, can be timing related, sure. But the big thing that's equally important as to the why it works and when you should do it is like, what would you prefer? If you're like, man, I can't stand the idea of drinking shakes during, well, drink it after. But if it's a nice little reward, you look forward to it the whole workout, it makes sense to you to do it after or before, doesn't affect your workout adversely, do it then.
Yeah, some people.
We talk about sleep in the brain and memories and preferences and all that. Like, the big thing I'm focusing on is that a huge training prescription guideline, if you can get to this level of detail, is to do on some level what you prefer. If certain things just don't make sense, if you just don't prefer it, if a workout's scheduled a certain time or in a certain way just is counter to what seems like what makes sense to you, do it another way.
Yeah.
If it matters that you come to the gym and do things the way that's intuitive, that makes sense, that gets you excited to train. Because if you are understanding what you're doing, what you're consuming, if you have a good reason behind how you rest and how you recover, if you organize your exercises in a way that makes sense to you and gets you excited to do it, then you're going to train really hard. And that's going to be coupled with your good recovery, and you can get really fantastic results. Your preference can't be overlooked. You got to focus on that as well.
Yeah. And some people, you know, they can't have that meal prior to training, you know.
Then don't do it.
And but
you should.
I mean, the best thing I can do is tell people what works for me. And, you know, I was given years ago, I mean, I'm pretty much on the same page as Doug and Chris. You know, my top 3 things are, you know, sleep, then just general good nutrition. And then, you know, you have that post-workout nutrition or during workout nutrition. But, you know, years ago, you know, we discovered some research that says, you know, you should drink whey protein and a sugar. And we started off taking whey and Gatorade, you know, it's like, okay, that makes sense. And since then we've been kind of fine tuning, you know, I'm playing around with different types of carbohydrates. You know, right now I'm playing around with, I don't drink whey at all, actually. I'm just taking a high dose of BCAAs, branched chain amino acids.
I don't like whey either. It makes me feel weird.
The argument was made to me, like, you should switch to BCAAs. Because it can just get in your system faster, and kind of what Doug was talking about, like, you know, that some of those nutrients being present while you're training. Well, if you're drinking BCAAs, you can drink them even closer and during and get the benefits from that even sooner. So what I've been playing around with lately is I can only find one, a glucose, just pure glucose supplement. And then I couple that with...
It's like a powder?
Yeah, it's just a powder. And I couple that with some BCAAs. And I get flavored BCAAs, because if you just take straight up BCAAs, you will probably yak.
It tastes
gross.
Terrible.
It's so gross. I feel like I'm drinking chemicals, you know? Like, I'm like, ugh.
What's a BCAA?
Branched chain amino acids. That's the main one you're really looking at. The main amino acid would be leucine. And then, what is this? L-glutamine.
Leucine, isoleucine, and valine.
No.
for the branch chains.
And I've got the BCAAs, and then it also has glutamine in it also.
Okay.
So mine has, the stuff I'm taking actually has 4.
So how do you feel so far with this approach?
So I switched to that about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, and I actually feel amazing. I was not consuming as many carbohydrates in my my during and post workout shakes, and I bumped them because I was feeling tired near the end of my workout. So I was like, okay, I'm low energy. I need to put a little more sugar in there. So I'm taking about 40 grams of sugar as pure glucose. And then I'm taking the amino acids. Now, the BCAAs, I'm actually triple dosing. So most people, when they take BCAAs, they're getting about 10 grams total, like if you were to add them all up. And they take them.
One little scoop of whatever is provided.
And what I used to do is, like, I would take my BCAAs prior to training, and I would take a single serving. But what I've learned about most supplements is you should probably double or triple the dose. That's a joke. that does not apply across the board.
Oh, it sounds good. I'm writing it down.
Yeah. Triple everything.
If the doctor gives you drugs, you should probably ignore the prescription dose.
And then drink a bunch of grapefruit juice.
to close that loop a little bit with the BCAAs, we mentioned that it's those 3 amino acids, and that might not mean shit to some of the people listening. So protein is made out of amino acids, mm-hmm. right? And those 3 amino acids are the most important ones that we find in the majority of the proteins that we would be eating. So you're basically kind of whittling down to the most important 3, and those are the ones that you're focusing on.
The primary amino acid is responsible for keeping the muscles from breaking down, and also initiates the muscle to build back up sooner.
Yeah.
And that would be leucine. So what I'm doing is I'm triple dosing that. So I'm getting like 30 grams of protein in just those 3 amino acids.
So it's 30 grams of that powder.
Yeah. If you were to do the same thing with whey protein, you might be, I'm just going to make a really general assumption. I haven't done the math. It might be like 100 grams of protein. Like, to get that same amount of dosage. Yeah. I might be having to take like 100 grams of whey protein or something like that to get that same amount. And I think that's probably,
that's
a ballpark figure.
That would give you the shits.
That might be hard to swallow.
Figuratively and literally.
Yeah, I mean, it has to do a lot with speed of digestion, you know? I can either drink 100 grams of whey protein, maybe a lot of those amino acids I don't need. So for that, at that specific time, you need them, the other ones too, but...
testicle KM.
So I'm taking the BCAAs, triple dosing those. I'm going to do that for a while, and I may quadruple dose and see if I get an even better effect. So my workout shake has creatine, beta-alanine in it, the glucose, and the BCAAs. And I'm actually seeing, I've noticed I've gotten leaner, stayed about the same weight, maybe lost a pound or two. And I feel during my workouts amazing. I get done, and I'm like, man, I feel really good.
You should put up links on the show right now, CTP, inside my hands when you edit. Links to those products. Glucose powder? No?
And, sounds like a lot of work.
BCA? Oh, click here. No. And then click here for that. And then combine them into this, which is a shaker bottle.
I'm talking about this right now, but I'd hate to openly promote a product after having 10 days of experience myself.
Who needs more than 10 days of experience for anything?
It's like, not only
Have you read the 4-hour work week? You can master things rapidly and then move on to something else.
It's a case study, and it's very short term. So we'll be, you know, if in 6 weeks I'm still feeling fantastic about it, I might start promoting it. Maybe prescribing like the same, you know, okay, I found that it's better to take 5 times, or I found out I didn't need to take 3 times. 2 times is probably a good amount.
I may play around with it too. We'll double our population sample.
Yeah,
that'll increase work.
I'll show you
the power of our sample. We'll see. All right,
so here, one time, very succinct. What exactly do you put in your workout drink?
40 grams of sugar in the form of a glucose supplement, 30 grams worth of BCAAs, 4 grams of beta alanine, and 5 grams of creatine. So that is what goes in my workout shake. So when I go to train, what I do
and
is,
water.
I do add some.
Okay, we're asking you what goes in there, and you didn't leave. You didn't say water.
Water goes in that as well. I drink that during training. Right now, most of my training is just weightlifting. It's a weightlift. I'm focusing on just that. So not a lot of conditioning going on there. If I was doing more conditioning, I would probably bump the carbs.
Would you scale those numbers based on activity, but also body weight?
Yes.
Would you approximate?
Yeah, you'd have to. Yeah, I weigh about 175 pounds, and that's what I'm dosing with right now. So you can
let's say you do the math. Let's say you were a very handsome 275 pound former power lifter who was interested in maybe trying this shake. What would you put in the shake?
I would do the same thing, probably increase it by 50%.
50%, all right. Because I have a friend who's a former powerlifter who's very handsome and weighs about 275 pounds.
So I got into a lot of detail with that. So just real quick, I drink the shake. I finish 2/3 of it while I train. As soon as I'm done, I finish the other third.
Slam a bar.
And then about 20 minutes later, I pour 36 ounces of raw goat's milk, and I try to finish that pretty quickly. And that's kind of like my workout, post-workout nutrition. I want to talk about sleep real quick. What I find to be optimal, and you know what some of the research supports and all that kind of stuff, and what I've found works for me is being in bed and trying to be asleep between like 9:30 and 10, trying to get asleep at least by 11. If I don't have to be up at a very specific time, I don't set my alarm clock. I just kind of wake up when I wake up. It tends to be between 6 and 7 o'clock anyway. I try to get that 8 to 9 hours of sleep is ideal for me. I then between 1 and 3 PM, I take another nap. If I am loaded down with work and I've got stuff going on, I take a 30-minute power nap. If I have the opportunity, I go to bed around 1, and I set my alarm clock for, 3 o'clock. So I'll let myself sleep for 2 hours, but I will not, I won't sleep after 3, but I rarely need the alarm clock. What I do is I fall asleep. I go through a full sleep cycle it lasts between 60 and 90 minutes. Mm-hmm. I want to get that hormonal response so that I get a little extra recovery. So I get that extra dose of testosterone growth hormone. And then I go off and train or whatever. You know, ideal scenario, I would sleep 8 to 10 hours every night and take a 90-minute nap every day. I don't live in an ideal world. Pretty close to it.
I'm not taking any naps.
I'd say 3 days of the week I can get that 90-minute nap, and if I really make it a priority. And I'm working on getting more time for me, so I can do that.
I do on Fridays.
Because you give up so much of yourself now. You need to focus on you.
The older I get,
he's like, that's how I feel.
Yeah, the older I get, the more selfish I become with like having my time for my own recovery.
Ashley tells me.
Yeah, my wife agrees with that comment. I guarantee it. Like, he is selfish. I'm like, woman, you should try being selfish yourself. Stop doing shit for me.
So what if you're doing all the stuff that we're talking about right now and you still feel under recovered? What then? We'll start with you.
Take lots of steroids.
There you go.
Take a trip to Tijuana.
The honest truth on the Barbershop Podcast.
Buy them. Take all your... liquidate some money from your 401k. Buy the drugs. Put them in your anal cavity. Sneak across the border. And then you have plenty of drugs. Take them.
Yeah. Whenever someone says they don't have enough money for steroids, they forget about their 401k.
That was all lies and jokes. Don't do that. I would say, once you assume that you have enough of something... Like, I'm sleeping plenty, but yet I don't feel rested, and I'm eating plenty, but I don't have the energy to train. Let that be a warning sign that your perspective and your assumptions could be totally wrong. Like, maybe talk to a good coach, have some correspondence with us. We'd love to talk to you. It could be that what you think is enough is nowhere near enough. That happens a lot. It's just that you in your mind, it's a lot. You're really working on it, but you might not be working on it like you think you're working on it.
Yeah,
that'd be my first guess.
Yeah, if you didn't get a lot of sleep before, like if you're one of those guys that gets 5 hours a night, and then you're like up to 7, and you're like, I am crushing sleep.
If the training is good, if you're at a good box with good prescriptions, or you've got a good strength coach, and you are paying all the attention you possibly can to your diet, and you are sleeping the amount you need to sleep with the quality of sleep you need, and you are legitimately not recovering... You got cancer or something. You better go to the doctor. Be careful. Take a closer look.
Yeah, I find that to be true.
Those two things should cover it.
I talk to... This happens a lot with women is, I'm like, how much...
What you say here?
I'm treading here. I'm treading.
These women, they think...
Lisa just looked at you like, you better watch it.
I've had women tell me, I eat plenty of this or that. Like, I have got it. And I'm like, all right, fill me out a diet log and send it to me. And I get the dialogue, and it's like they're eating like 1,200 calories and training like 8 times a week. And I'm like, that is not going to cut it, you know? It's just like they're not consuming enough protein or enough high-quality protein or something like that, and that's exactly what it is. In their mind, you know, compared to what they used to eat when they were a vegan, this is a lot of protein, you know, but this is not, you know, enough. Getting that objective view, you know, like, you know, let's record how much you actually do sleep. When did you go to bed this week?
Look at the numbers and tell you what they think. Yeah, I think be honest and have somebody really look at what you're doing.
I think a lot of times people go, oh, I did really good on Monday. Tuesday was an exception because this thing happened. And Wednesday, well, that other thing happened too, so I made the exception there. And then if someone's really logging everything and they come to find out they make a lot of exceptions all the time. And so, you know, they
and
usually remember
the
good days.
Exception is the norm.
It's no longer the exception.
In a world, in a world where exceptions become the rule. No, but yeah, I mean, if every once in a while I cheat, you know, I cheat like, you know, Tuesday afternoon and maybe Wednesday morning and Thursday all day and Saturday and Sunday I have whatever I want. Then way more common than the joke would suggest.
Super typical. I won't name who this person is, but she'll be like, she'll be like, man, why is it that you're lean all the time and I can't seem to lose this fat I want to lose? I'm like, well, how many times do you cheat this week? She's like, one time. I'm like, well, what about Tuesday night? Okay, two times.
Well, but it was just a bowl of queso. Come on, it was cheese.
What about Wednesday? What about Wednesday lunch? Okay, that was four times. And it's like okay.
Start adding them up.
And then it becomes the movie The Jerk. So
Yeah.
And then you're in the doghouse.
That's right. Whoa, who are we talking about here?
We still don't know. We didn't name any names.
You gave away too much, Doug.
That's right.
Is it time now for, should we plug? And
no.
We nailed this thing.
No.
I've been having
those
a good
two
time.
Those 2 points were smashed to death.
Oh, man.
We crushed that.
Oh, yeah. There's one thing I want to talk about. We were kind of discussing prior to the show is what if you are doing all, what if you can't do the ideal recovery? You know what I mean? What if you can't get 8 hours?
What if you have the newborn kid?
Yeah. What if you have a job where, you know, if your boss catching you trying to sneak underneath your desk and catch a 20-minute nap, you're screwed.
Yeah.
You know, what if you can't do that? What if you're a poor college student and you can't afford the higher quality food, all that kind of stuff?
Well, the interesting thing about those two examples is that you can probably put extra focus on the other thing.
That's
true. Like if you can't get enough sleep, because your job or your baby won't allow it, then you could probably maybe put more focus on diet, maybe invest in some things that'll help you maybe pay more attention to higher quality intake of foods, more diligence on that end. If you're a college student who has no money, can't buy good food, well, as busy as you think you are, you probably got time to sleep in. You know, class starts at 11, asshole, sleep in. You know, put extra focus on that. So, I mean, that's probably your first decent strategy, right?
When I was in college, I was sleeping 9 hours a night and taking a nap every afternoon.
Yeah, people go, man, you don't understand how tough it is to be in college. I got 2 classes this semester. And my dad's making me work like 8 hours a week at fucking Papa John's. And like, you know, it's just really tough. Like, and you're like, wow, as a 30-year-old man, I realized that in college, I was an idiot. Going to school is not hard. I don't give a shit how many papers your professor made you write this semester.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I always look back on my life when I was younger. Every point in my life, I'm like, I am working so hard. And then as I get older, I'm like, man, nothing. It's only going to get worse. Like, when I'm 60, I'm going to be working my ass off. I'm going to get no sleep.
But doing what you love.
At this rate.
But you'll be living the dream.
That's what they say. So if you're not getting the ideal recovery, say you can only get 6 hours a night, you know, what are some things that you can change about your training? Like, what would you want to change about your training volume potentially, you know?
One thing I've done in the past is when I'm super sore, I'm extra sleepy. Like back when I used to do like hypertrophy training and I was just wrecked sore everywhere, which still definitely
happens. What is hypertrophy training?
Means getting real sore just so you can get bigger.
Cool.
Pretty much. But
lots
yeah,
of this.
That makes
lots of that.
Yeah. It was mostly back squats and RDLs for us.
Mostly screaming for me.
Yeah. So if you're wrecked sore, then you're often super tired. And so if you can make it where you're not quite so sore, then you won't be quite as sleepy. And I've experienced this a couple times where I can do more conditioning, doing the type of conditioning that doesn't make you sore, pushing the prowler, doing the rower, air dining. You can do all your conditioning where you're not getting quite as sore, and then I just don't feel like I need as much recovery because I'm just not breaking down as much tissue.
Being smarter. Or you could do like instead of like 10 sets of 10 back squats, you might do a few, you might reduce your volume to like a box squat where you can sit down nice and easy and jump up real fast. And that would sort of break down some of the wear and tear, take some of that out of it.
I think it's a really good point. Is, you know, trying to reduce the amount of work that causes muscular damage. You know, mm-hmm. I personally was thinking more along the lines of just lowering your volume, period, you know, mm-hmm. the amount of energy you're going
to
spend.
Yeah, in that situation, but you know you're not going to be recovered. Don't try to mimic like...
That might be a way to keep your volume higher without...
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, don't try to mimic... That's the exact same thing, though. With a box squat, you're basically, by eliminating the deceleration at the bottom, you eliminate how sore you get as a result, too. So that's kind of the same thing, really.
Yeah. But yeah, that's good. When you know, when there's some kind of program you're trying to follow or somebody's training you're trying to follow, that's one of the reasons why just blindly following a blog's training program may be really bad for you, because this may be a group of highly trained weightlifters who aren't doing anything else but this 2 to 3 days of training.
Right.
Or two to three sessions a day of training. And you're a guy with a newborn kid, an 8-to-5 corporate job, and a wife who wants to see and talk to you and engage in you on a human level when you get home from the gym.
Jeez.
You're not going to get up at 5 o'clock a.m. and then on your lunch break and then at 10 o'clock at night trying to do that training. It's not going to work. You're going to fail horribly and your life will be shit. Choose the better path. Train 3 days a week, you know, on the day where, you know, your wife says, yeah, take that time for you. Focus on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and then make that 1 hour you get to train precious and efficient and only the things that count and really plan it out and come into it prepared. And afterwards, get home and get recovered. I mean, you got to put priority where priority is.
That's
due.
Something you've done the last couple of years.
You had to. I mean,
you
if
had
you're
a
gonna...
kid last year. And like, one of the things you talk about is selecting, exercise selection. You know, you kind of threw out a lot of these, you know, maybe some of this assistance work that was creating a lot of training volume.
Yeah, when I mean, but when now I powerlifted, I would do like 40 minutes of assistance work to warm up.
Right.
Then like 2 to 3 main exercises. And then 3 to 4 of all these little exercises you think you must have to get better, and they help. But the reality is, if you're strapped for time, you got 3 training sessions a week you can do. My view is, well, if I came in each time and squatted, I pulled a couple times, I pressed once a week because that's all my shoulders allow because I can't recover from any more than that. Those are the things that give me the biggest bang for my buck. On a day I don't have time to do, you know, push-ups or single leg squats or something or sit-ups, then you won't do it because that's not going to matter. What matters is in that hour you get the main thing in. On the days you have the luxury of some time and you're feeling great and the kid's with the wife and you have all this time to train, you can do some stuff. You can do extra sets of back raises and all that. And it's going to help you, but it's not critical. So, you know, just enjoy it. But yeah, you got to be smart. You got to pick the biggest bang for the buck. That's going to be the barbell in an hour's time.
Yeah, nothing wrong with coming in just doing 5x5 on squatting and going home. It's way better than nothing.
Look, if half the people listening to the show, hello, readers, viewers, how are you? Hope you're doing good. If you came in, got a sweat going, hit your squats for 5x5, put every molecule of effort and focus in on those 5 sets and then went home, you'd probably get really strong really quick. You don't have to do the 5 sets of RDLs after, then the sit-ups, then the WOD your buddy prescribed where you do the 45 sets of 20 reps on the kettlebell swings. Don't worry about all that. Yep. You do the 5x5 the way it should be done, you will be destroyed and in need of a nap afterwards.
Yeah, for conditioning, I like intervals a lot. If you are super pressed for time, if you run a 400-meter sprint at 100% full speed, take a 5-minute break, and then do it again, you might only need to run 2 of them, and you will get plenty of good workout.
Yeah, I agree.
You'll be out of there, you know, after your warm-up, be out of there in, you know, 10 minutes.
Strategy.
Yeah. All right, guys, I think it's about time to wrap things up. Mm-hmm. Remember to get your rest. So might be good to start tracking some of these things. Get your rest. Look at your workout nutrition and just look at your total calories throughout the entire day. Don't forget to go to fitter.tv and sign up for the newsletter. Doug, what do you got to plug?
I got 2 things today. Number one,
Lisa
Mack right over here taking our photos today. Yeah. Lisa, she owns L Max Studios here in town, and she actually just got done taking my engagement photos. She actually took all y'all's engagement photos too, right?
Or not me.
No?
No, I had another photographer take mine. But she's taken many great photos, and I would rather go back in time and have her do it, sure. She's a very talented individual.
So she does a great job for us. So if you're in Memphis and you need some photos taken, Lisa Mack at L Max Studio is a great option.
What's your website?
LMAXStudio.com. You can fly her to where you are, too. I mean, hell, she'll go.
Yeah, you can fly her out. Yeah, LMAXStudio.com if you're here in Memphis and you want some photos taken. and she especially enjoys wedding photos and engagement photos. Is that right? And baby photos. So if you just had a newborn baby.
Here's a link for her website, CTP. Put it right there.
Do you do nudes?
Click here. No.
You do nudes?
She does nudes for CrossFit males only.
Sign me up.
That's right. The other thing is the Faction Foods Nutrition Course. We talk about recovery all day. That nutrition course goes through, you know, from knowing nothing about paleo to having like a full-scale paleo plan and knowing exactly what to do. A step-by-step 8-session course where you learn everything you need to know about how to improve your nutrition so you can recover better, get stronger, and get better at CrossFit. Chris?
Oh, yeah, me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, go on Fitter TV and check out the Simple Strength Seminar. We have now added value. We've done the little applied supplement to the Simple Strength Seminar.
They said it couldn't be done.
They said it couldn't be done. We did it. A simple how-to for applying the proven, awesomely simple and effective principles of the Simple Strength Seminar into your training program. So I wrote a little 10-page ebook, start to finish, how you can apply each one of those main points from that seminar to get a really rock-solid, dead simple, easy-to-follow training program in place that can start you on the path of achieving your goals today.
So if you purchase the Simple Strength product before, log back in and check it out because it's in there now. I think Doug probably already sent you an email letting you know that that's the case.
Right. And most importantly,
I sent out to everybody, but there's still a link on the actual product page if you've purchased Simple Strength where you can click and go check it out.
Give it a read, apply it, give us feedback how it's going. If you've got a unique situation, let's give you some coaching advice. Let's help you through your journey towards achieving your strength goals.
That's right. I would say that's how we did it. We got feedback from someone who bought the product and they said, I wish you had one of these things as part of the product. And we said, okay, and we went and made it and we put it on there.
It's just that easy. It's just that friggin' easy.
That's the best part about having digital products where it's just part of a web page and you can go add to it anytime.
You dream it up, we'll achieve it. And then we'll give it to you. And then the other thing, check out the blog, thechrismoreblog.com. I drew a fancy banner for you. Oh, it's so fancy. Go look at it. And then there'll be a new, today is January 6th. Tonight there's going to be a new, by the time this appears, you'll have seen it and read it and have digested it. And oh, this is the greatest thing. But there's a blog post on Rush going up tonight, the greatest band that ever came from Canada, Rush. I'm not joking. This is going to happen. So check out that blog. Reach out to me. Give me some feedback. Hit me up on the tweeters. Whatever your heart desires, I will provide to you with knowledge.
Cool. Yeah. In the next few weeks, I did a nutrition seminar yesterday at CrossFit Carville. We recorded it, and it will be up in the store in a week or two, whenever CTP gets around to editing that down.
Busy guy.
It will be a bonus to Doug's Faction Foods Nutrition course. So if you bought his at any time, you will have access to mine as well. So I think that's it. Everyone go get some rest, drink your post-workout shakes.
Lisa's getting some rest right now.
We're going to sign off on this?
Eat some good
She loves
food,
animals.
Get recovered. Peace out, guys.
Vaya con Dios. Guys.